First Love, Last Rites, written by Ian McEwan and read by Mark Meadows.
Solid Geometry. In Melton Mowbray in 1875, at an auction of articles of curiosity and worth, my great-grandfather, in the company of M., his friend, bid for the penis of Captain Nichols, who died in Horsemonger Jail in 1873. It was bottled in a glass 12 inches long, and, noted my great-grandfather in his diary that night, in a beautiful state of preservation. Also for auction was the unnamed portion of the late Lady Barrymore. It went to Sam Israels for 50 guineas. My great-grandfather was keen on the idea of having the two items as a pair, and M. dissuaded him. This illustrates perfectly their friendship. My great-grandfather, the excitable theorist, M., the man of action, who knew when to bid at auctions. My great-grandfather lived for 69 years. For 45 of them, at the end of every day, he sat down before going to bed and wrote his thoughts in a diary. These diaries are on my table now, 45 volumes bound in calf leather, and to the left sits Captain Nichols in the glass jar. My great-grandfather lived on the income derived from the patent of an invention of his father, a handy fastener used by corset makers right up till the outbreak of the First World War. My great-grandfather liked gossip, numbers, and theories. He also liked tobacco, good port, jugged hare, and, very occasionally, opium. He liked to think of himself as a mathematician, though he never had a job and never published a book. Nor did he ever travel or get his name in the Times, even when he died. In 1869, he married Alice, only daughter of the Reverend Toby Shadwell, co-author of a not highly regarded book on English wildflowers. I believe my great-grandfather to have been a very fine diarist, and when I have finished editing the diaries and they are published, I am certain he will receive the recognition due to him. When my work is over, I will take a long holiday, travel somewhere cold and clean and treeless, Iceland or the Russian steppes. I used to think that at the end of it all I would try, if it was possible, to divorce my wife, Maisie. But now, there is no need at all. Often Maisie would shout in her sleep, and I would have to wake her. "Put your arm around me," she would say. "It was a horrible dream. I had it once before. I was in a plane, flying over a desert, but it wasn't really a desert. I took the plane lower, and I could see there were thousands of babies heaped up, stretching away into the horizon, all of them naked and climbing over each other. I was running out of fuel, and I had to land the plane. I tried to find a space. I flew on and on, looking for a space." "Go to sleep now," I said through a yawn. "It was only a dream." "No," she cried, "I mustn't go to sleep, not just yet." "Well, I have to sleep now," I told her. "I have to be up early in the morning." She shook my shoulder. "Please don't go to sleep yet. Don't leave me here." "I'm in the same bed," I said. "I won't leave you." "It makes no difference. Don't leave me awake." But my eyes were already closing. Lately I have taken up my great-grandfather's habit. Before going to bed, I sit down for half an hour and think over the day. I have no mathematical whimsies or sexual theories to note down. Mostly I write out what Maisie has said to me and what I have said to Maisie. Sometimes, for complete privacy, I lock myself in the bathroom, sit on the toilet seat and balance the writing pad on my knees. Apart from me, there is occasionally a spider or two in the bathroom. They climb up the waste pipe and crouch perfectly still on the glaring white enamel. They must wonder where they have come to. After hours of crouching, they turn back, puzzled, or perhaps disappointed they could not learn more. As far as I can tell, my great-grandfather made only one reference to spiders. On May 8, 1906, he wrote, "Bismarck is a spider."